Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So today is Friday. And we will try to get... It's been a long week for me, and especially a long day. And the material we have to cover right now is among the most complex of the whole course. So I hope I can keep my mind sharp enough to hold your attention. But those of you who were here yesterday, we've again put up this chart, which shows a basic scheme of the Vedic unfoldment of creation in four stages. The terminology is actually drawn from the Upanishads and Panchatric literature. The reason I'm presenting this is to show you that this theme of creation manifesting in four stages, it is not something unique only to Srimad Bhagavatam or to Gaudiya Vaishnavism, but it is a consistent presentation of many sources in the Vedas. It is standard. So now what we're going to do, and I beg your forgiveness, because this is going to get a lot technical. We are going to now follow this same fourfold scheme, but as it is presented in from various references in Srila Prabhupada's books. We are sticking to Srila Prabhupada's purports and to his language. But I am sure that you will be able to see that the basic scheme is the same. So actually, the Srimad Bhagavatam and also Chaitanya Charitamrita is being quoted here, is filling out this basic scheme. This is a kind of a sketch or a skeleton model that you are seeing here, that we find in the Vedanta literature, Upanishads, and so on. But Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, they fill out the picture in a very complete and personal way. And I started to explain that yesterday, how these fourfold, these terms, Brahman, Ishvara, Hiranyagarbha, and Virat, actually correspond with Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradumna, or Hiranyagarbha, Garbhodakshay Vishnu, and Aniruddha. So I mentioned that, but now we're actually going to go deeply into the references that back up. We can take what I said yesterday as a claim I made. Now today, like a lawyer arguing a case before a judge, I'm going to provide all the proof. So, you know, if you like to take notes and note down all these verse references, you can look this up yourself later on. So, now we are going to compare this, what you see on the board, to key statements from Srila Prabhupada's books. And we will begin with a quotation from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 20, verse 276, purport. This is the purport in Srila Prabhupada's own words. The three types of egotism, ahamkara, are technically known as Vaikarika, Taijasa. You see, the middle term is there, Taijasa. As I said, the language is somewhat different, but the concepts are the same. Vaikarika, Tejasa, and Tamasa. The Mahatattva is situated within the heart, or the Chitta, and the predominating deity of the Mahatattva is Lord Vasudev. And this is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, 26, verse 21. So, I just want to point out how it's interesting. You see, there's always this cross-referencing of macrocosm and microcosm. Because this is a depiction of creation, yet at the same time, Srila Prabhupada says, the Mahatattva is situated within the heart. You see. So this is why the study of the Bhagavat science of the mind, or Bhagavat psychology, cannot be separated from the study of creation. Because the creation is the same subject matter, just written in cosmic terms. And the human body is just a small local image or reproduction of the great scheme of creation. Therefore it is said that the Lord Himself has a material body, which is known as the Virat. You see the word there, Virat, Virat Rupa. It is stated in Srila Prabhupada's purports in several places that the Lord Himself has a material body, the universal form. And so our body, gross and subtle, because there is also a subtle aspect to the universal form. Later on, I think it'll be in a later section, we'll actually provide you, we'll draw another chart which will actually show you the levels of the universe according to gross and subtle and causal. These three, the karana, causal body, linga sharira, subtle body, and stula sharira, gross body. So the universe is similarly, the planetary systems mentioned in the Bhagavatam, the seven higher planetary systems, or Bhur, Bhuvah, Svah, those seven divided into three, are equivalent to that. They are also classified according to gross, subtle, and causal. Causal means the Satyaloka. Satyaloka is the place where Brahmaloka is, but also Kailash and Svetadvip. So, those are where the causal lords are. Lord Brahma being the source of the Rajaguna, Lord Vishnu being the source of the Sattva Guna, and Lord Shiva being the source of the Tamoguna. So that's the causal region of the universe. Then there's a subtle region, which I believe goes up to around Janaloka, Maharloka, from Bhuvaloka to Mahar or Janaloka, and then there's the gross region, which is this Bhurloka, earth, and then below. Of course, there's seven lower regions, subterranean, Bilasvarga, and they are gross. So just as we have our gross, subtle, and causal bodies, that is just simply derived from the universe. So it's interesting here that Srila Prabhupada is talking about three types of egoism. So, technically known as Vaikaraka, Tejasa, and Tamasa, that can refer either to the greater cosmos or locally to us. And then he says the Mahatattva. We always think of the Mahatattva, Mahavishnu lying in the Mahatattva, but here he says the Mahatattva is situated within the heart. So there is a local, that's a fact. In the Upanishad, there's a term dahara. Dahara is used. It's in Vedanta Sutra, which means the small sky in the heart. There's a vast sky, spiritual sky, and in one corner of the sky, you know, it is said that there's a cloudy region called Mahatattva. So the Vedanta Sutra says also within our heart there is dahara, there's a small sky, a local sky. And there also within that sky is the sound, the original spiritual sound. But the jiva, he can take that sound materially, and that Vedic sound materially, and then that becomes the cause of his entanglement in creation. So, the Mahatattva situated in the heart, Chitta. Heart is called Chitta. And the predominating deity of the Mahatattva is Lord Vasudeva. The Mahatattva is transformed into three divisions. Vaikaraka, egoism in goodness, which is also known as Sattvika Ahamkara, from which the 11th sense organ, the mind, is manifest, and whose predominating deity is Aniruddha. This is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam 3:26, verses 27 and 28. The second division of false ego is Taijasa, or egoism in passion, which is also called Rajasa Ahankara, from which the senses and intelligence are manifest, and whose predominating deity is Lord Pradyumna. This is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam 3:26, 29 through 31. And thirdly, there is the Tamasa division of false ego, or egoism in ignorance, from which sound vibration, Shabda Tanmatra, expands. From the sound vibration, the sky, Akash, is manifest, and the senses beginning with the ear are also manifest. This is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam 3:26-32. Of these three types of egoism, Lord Sankarshan is the predominating deity. So, here then, the three types of ignorance are Ishwara, Hiranyagarbha, Virat. So Ishwara, that is, again, Mahavishnu. Hiranyagarbha is Pradyumna. This is the mode of passion. And Virat is the gross manifestation of the universe. In the portion of the purport from Madhya Lila, chapter 20, quoted before, Srila Prabhupada writes that Lord Sankarshan is the predominating deity over three kinds of egoism that manifest within the Mahatattva. As we have already seen, the three personalities of the Chaturvyuha, beginning with Sankarshan, are associated with the three Purusha avatars who generate the material creation. The first Purusha, Mahavishnu, expands from Sankarshan. He is called Ishwara in the Upanishads and is said to preside over the karana, causal feature of embodiment. From Srila Prabhupada's books, we know that Mahavishnu lies upon the karana jal, causal ocean, to breathe uncountable universes out from his pores. The Upanishads say that Ishwara is the lord of dreamless sleep, or Shushupti. Srila Prabhupada writes in Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.32, purport, quotation, "The Adi Purusha, the original personality, supreme personality of Godhead, Krishna Govinda, expands himself as Mahavishnu. After the annihilation of this cosmic manifestation, he keeps himself in transcendental bliss. The word Yoga Nidram is used in reference to the supreme personality of Godhead. One should understand that this Nidra or sleep is not like our Nidra in the mode of ignorance. The Lord is always situated in transcendence. He is Satchit Ananda, eternally in bliss. And thus he is not disturbed by sleep like ordinary human beings. It should be understood that the Supreme Personality of God is in transcendental bliss in all stages. Srila Madhvacharya concisely states that the Lord is Turiya Stittaha, always situated in transcendence." Remember, I said yesterday, Turiya means the fourth stage above the three modes of nature. In transcendence, there is no such thing as Jagrana Nidra Shushupti, or wakefulness, deep sleep, that means dreaming sleep, and deep sleep. You see? The fact that in 24 hours we have to go through wakefulness, dreaming sleep, and deep sleep is the proof that we are under the modes of material nature. Our consciousness is conditioned by these three modes. Wakefulness, meaning Jagrata, the mode of goodness. Dreaming sleep is the mode of passion, and deep dreamless sleep, the comatose state is the tamoguna. So this quotation we just read is full of significance. We see here that while there is an apparent difference in their influence upon consciousness of the jivas, there is no difference in the transcendental positions of Lord Vasudeva and Lord Sankarshan, Mahavishnu. You will recall from Essay 1, a quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam 11:25-20, stating that wakeful consciousness is symptomatic of goodness, dream consciousness is symptomatic of passion, and unconsciousness is symptomatic of ignorance. Thus, while Lord Sankarshan's influence over the jiva is tamasic, he himself is always turiya-stitaha, beyond the modes of nature. All Vishnu Tattva forms are equally transcendental. Here's a quotation. All plenary expansions are one and the same Vishnu Tattva. There is no difference in their potency. That's from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 1, Verse 34, Purport. And here's another quotation from Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 7, Verse 4, Purport. Anyone who knows these three Vishnus, anyone who knows these three Vishnus can be liberated from material entanglement. So it is very wrong to think that Lord Sankarshan or Lord Mahavishnu is, you know, somehow too much associating with the mode of ignorance, therefore he's sleeping all the time, or whatever. We see once more the relationship of samasti to vyasti. Samasti, remember, means the whole picture. The whole, say, there's a nice English word in the English, fancy word from English dictionary, cosmoptic. Optic means the vision, and cosmos means the universe. So cosmoptic means to take in the universe and into one's vision. So in other words, samasti means the cosmoptic point of view, seeing the universe as a whole, one unit. So we see once more the relationship of samasti to vyasti. Vyasti means our divided individuality. Of course, we are eternally individuals, but being an individual does not mean that we are divided. We are eternally divided from Krishna. That's the Mayavadi idea, of course. That's how they understand individuality. It simply means to be divided from Brahman. But in Achincha Beda Beda Tattva philosophy, one can retain one's individuality and yet be intimately related with the Supreme Param Brahman, Sri Krishna. So, the deep sleep of the Vyasti living entities is an incomplete imitation of the lila of complete transcendental bliss enjoyed by Mahasamasti, Lord Mahavishnu. Vedanta Sutra 1.3.15, and the sutra states, Gati shabdabhyam tathahi drishtam lingam cha, indicates that the dahara, that's the word I just explained, or the supersoul, intimately associates with the living entities in deep sleep, although they fail to realize it. Chandogya Upanishad 8.3.2 says that every day the living entities go to the spiritual world of Brahman without knowing it. Deep sleep, susupti, is an energy of Mahavishnu. Every night he comes to associate with us because the Paramatma in our heart is no different in potency from Mahavishnu. And we are wrapped in the blanket of his susupti potency. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.3 compares the jiva soul to a fish in a river, in that the self moves from one state of conditioned consciousness to another, like a fish swims from one bank of a river to another. The river is the energy of the three Vishnus, Jagrana, Svapna, Shushupti. And here's a quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam 6.16.54, Evam, Jagaranandini jiva stanani chatmana maya matrani vijnaya tad drasparam param smaret, which means all conditions of deep sleep, dreaming and wakefulness are but energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one should always remember the original creator of these conditions, the Supreme Lord, who is unaffected by them. The Upanishads say that Ishwara, Mahavishnu, is the Lord of Pragya. In Canto 1 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada translates Pragya as introspective knowledge. You see that term is there, Pragya. Is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it's there. Okay. So Srila Prabhupada translates Pragya as introspective knowledge. Gita 2.57 explains Pragya to be knowledge by which one is unaffected by any condition in the material world. Maharaj Yudhisthira achieved such introspective knowledge by merging the five gross elements of the body into the three modes of material nature, which also refers to the three aspects of the subtle body: mind, which is the product of the mode of goodness; intelligence, the product of the mode of passion; and false ego, which is the product of ignorance. He then merged the modes into one nescience, which Srila Prabhupada terms avyakta mahatattva. See Srimad Bhagavatam 1.15.42 purport. This one nescience Yudhisthira finally absorbed into Brahman, the pure self. The same progression is outlined in this quotation from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, verses 6 and 7 purport. Quote, "The five great elements are a gross representation of the false ego, which in turn represents the primal stage of false ego, technically called the materialistic conception or tamasa buddhi, intelligence and ignorance. This further represents the unmanifested stage of the three modes of material nature. The unmanifested modes of material nature are called pradhan." So pradhan is a synonym for avyakta mahatattva. And tamasa buddhi is a synonym for this mahat, great intelligence. So buddhi means intelligence, but it is intelligence that is in touch with the tamoguna, which is the controlling principle behind the tamoguna. So the avyakta mahatattva is the root stage of the material creation, karana. The Upanishads call it mahat. Beyond this mahat is Brahman, or Vasudev Sattva, pure consciousness. Lord Vasudev presides over Vasudev Sattva. Lord Sankarshan presides over avyakta mahatattva, the unmanifested mahatattva, or pradhan. And Lord Pradyumna presides over vyakta, manifest mahatattva. The Upanishads term this third stage of creation taijasa, which is referring to the mode of passion, because from Lord Pradyumna, who is Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, the Rajoguna avatar, Lord Brahma, appears. And he creates by the agency of the mode of passion, because he's invested, it's described in the Brahma Samhita, that he's invested with the tejas. The word tejasa comes from tejas, and tejas means effulgent potency. So the Lord endows Brahma with this tejas, which is originally spiritual, and Brahma uses it. He takes it and it becomes the mode of passion by which he creates. He does his vikara portion of the creation. So again, kindly recall the quotation from Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 20, verse 276 purport. There it is said, "Taijasa, or egotism in passion, rajasa ahamkara, from which the senses and intelligence are manifest, and whose predominating deity is Lord Pradyumna." And this is from Srimad Bhagavatam 2.26.29-31. Garbhodakshaya Vishnu expands from Lord Pradyumna. Chapter 1 referred you to a quotation, that's chapter 1 of what I've written here, from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya 2, chapter 2, verse 292, that stated Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is the Hiranyagarbha, or supersoul, of the whole universe. The Upanishads call him Hiranyagarbha. They say that the Linga Sharira, subtle body, emanates from him. This is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.30. Quote, "When there was a desire to think about the activities of his own energy, then the heart, the seat of the mind, the moon, the heart, the seat of the mind itself, the moon, which is the deity of the mind, determination, and all desire became manifested. So again, this is from this we can understand that just as we have our own subtle nature, so also this can be understood on a cosmic scale. That there's a whole aspect of the universe, a whole region of the universe that is subtle. So the Linga Sharira is the dream body. Linga Sharira means the subtle body. This is the dream body. Quote, one can experience the distinction between the subtle and gross bodies even daily in a dream. One's gross body is lying on the bed while the subtle body carries the soul, the living entity, to another atmosphere. Srimad Bhagavatam 4.12.18 purport. Thus Hiranyagarbha or Garbhadakshaya Vishnu presides over the svapnas or dream state of consciousness, which is in the mode of passion. Chiradakshaya Vishnu, the Paramatma, enters into the heart of the Linga Sharira or subtle body. Within the individual heart, he is the localized feature of Lord Aniruddha, who presides over the Vaikarika phase of creation, false ego in the mode of goodness, Sattvika Ahankara. The Upanishads call him Virat, a name of Chiradakshaya Vishnu. That's confirmed in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya, chapter 21, verse 39, purport. That Chiradakshaya Vishnu has, his other name is Virat. He is said to preside over Jagrata, the wakeful state of embodied consciousness. But there seems to be a contradiction between the Upanishads and Srimad Bhagavatam. Because this fourth stage of creation is termed Vishva by the Upanishads. The indication is that it is the most gross stage of development by which the Stula Sharira, or the body of five physical elements, appears. The Lord of Vishva, named Virat, is said to hold the jivas in the thrall of Ahamkara, false ego. The gross elements and false ego suggest the mode of ignorance, which is ruled by Sankarsha. So what is the connection of that to Aniruddha, who is the ruler of the mode of goodness? A solution is found in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi 5, verse 41 purport, and Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, chapter 17, verse 16. We learn from the first reference, from Chaitanya Charitamrita, that the source of the Vishnu forms is Mula Sankarshan, which means the root Sankarshan. From him emanate Pradyumna and Aniruddha, Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu and Chiradakshaya Vishnu, the jivas and the whole material manifestation. Turning to the Bhagavatam reference in 5th canto, we learn that Sankarshan is the final expansion of the chapter of Vyuha, and that he is worshipped by Lord Shiva as the cause of that great demigod's existence. So how can Sankarshan be the root of the Purusha avatars and yet be the last expansion of the chapter of Vyuha? The answer becomes more clear in Srimad Bhagavatam 5.25.1. Apart from his form as Mahavishnu, Sankarshan appears within this universe as Ananta, who is Godhead in the form of a thousand-headed snake of cosmic proportions. Both are called Sankarshan. Mahavishnu, who is breathing out the universe, all the universes, is called Sankarshan, and the Ananta at the bottom of this universe is also called Sankarshan. Quotation. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said to Maharaj Parikshit, "My dear king, approximately 240,000 miles beneath the planet Patal lives another incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the expansion of Lord Vishnu, known as Lord Ananta or Lord Sankarshan. He is always in the transcendental position, but because he is worshipped by Lord Shiva, the deity of Tamogun, or darkness, he is sometimes called Tamasi. Lord Ananta is the predominating deity of the material mode of ignorance, as well as the false ego of all conditioned souls. When a conditioned living being thinks, 'I am the enjoyer, and this world is meant to be enjoyed by me,' this conception of life is dictated to him by Sankarshan. Thus, the mundane conditioned soul thinks himself the Supreme Lord. Chiradakshaya Vishnu, Aniruddha, and Ananta Sankarshan both preside over the Vishva phase of creation." You see, actually this Vishva, or gross material creation, is presided over by both Aniruddha and Sankarshan. The former, meaning Aniruddha, takes charge of the inner direction of the living entities. He's known as Antaryami, the inner ruler. The latter takes charge of their gross elemental bodies and the false ego. Srimad Bhagavatam 4:24-36 proclaims Aniruddha, Ananta and Sankarshan to be the same personality of Godhead. You can look that up. 4:24-36 and you will find it stated very clearly that Aniruddha, Ananta and Sankarshan are the same personality of Godhead.
Excuse me, can you repeat this reference?
4:24-36
Thank you.
And the names are specifically mentioned. Aniruddha, Ananta and Sankarshan. So they are the same personality of Godhead. Therefore, in some places, you see, this is what's confusing. In some places in Srila Prabhupada's purports, and books and purports, you'll find it stated that Lord Aniruddha is the deity of the total ego of the living entities. Sometimes you find that he's the Lord of motive goodness and the Lord of the mind, but there are a few references where he says he's the Lord of the ego, and then you scratch your head and you wonder what's going on. But you have to understand that non-different from him is this Lord Ananta at the bottom of the universe. And he is tamasi, and he is worshipped by Lord Shiva. And so, there are two aspects of the same personality of Godhead. Another gloss on the revelation there that there are two Sankarshans is found in Srimad Bhagavatam 4:24-36. There, Lord Sankarshan is said to have a twofold role in creation, integration and disintegration. Srila Prabhupada explains that the integrative force is seen as so-called gravitation, which holds the stuff of the world together. So gravitation, this is the power of Lord Sankarshan. One analysis of the Sanskrit word Sankarshan means the puller. Because Lord Balaram, he plows, you know, so a plow is pulled, you know, so he's the puller. So Lord Sankarshan is pulling everything together by his potency. At the time of devastation, the same Sankarshan releases the disintegrative force in the form of annihilating fire from his mouths. So from those thousand mouths of Lord Ananta, fire comes out, and Lord Shiva manifests within that fire, and he goes dancing like a blazing madman from planet to planet, setting every planet on fire. He does his, it's called the Tandava Nrita, the fire of devastation. So the fire comes out of Anantadeva's mouth. Lord Shiva, he himself is set on fire by that fire, but not destroyed by that fire. He just becomes like a burning torch. And he dances all to every corner of the universe and sets everything on fire. Sounds like fun, doesn't it? Perhaps some readers find this journey into the complexities of the Chaturvyuha and their influences on consciousness and creation to be brain-taxing. But there is an important lesson in transcendental psychology to be learned from it. Quote, in order to get release from the false ego, one has to worship Sankarshan. Sankarshan is also worshipped through Lord Shiva. And the snakes which cover the body of Lord Shiva are representations of Sankarshan. And Lord Shiva is always absorbed in meditation upon Sankarshan. One who is actually a worshipper of Lord Shiva as a devotee of Sankarshan can be released from false material ego. If one wants to get free from mental disturbances, one has to worship Aniruddha. For this purpose, worship of the moon planet is also recommended in the Vedic literature. Similarly, to be fixed in one's intelligence, one has to worship Pradyumna, who is reached through the worship of Brahma. These matters are explained in Vedic literature. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 26, Verse 21, purport. Here's another quotation. The science of God analyzes the constitutional position of God and His diverse energies. Material nature is called Prakriti, or the energy of the Lord, in His different Purusha incarnations, expansions, described in the Sattvata Tantra. I won't read all the Sanskrit, but the translation is, for material creation, Lord Krishna's plenary expansions assume three Vishnus. The first one, Mahavishnu, creates the total material energy known as the Mahatattva. The second, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, enters into all the universes to create diversities in each of them. The third, Chirodakshaya Vishnu, is diffused as the all-pervading Supersoul in all the universes and is known as Paramatma. He is present even within the atoms. Anyone who knows, listen to this, anyone who knows these three Vishnus can be liberated from material entanglement. This is from Bhagavad Gita chapter 7, verse 4, purport. So you can see from this the clear connection to the cosmic vision of these three Purusha avatars, Mahavishnu emanating from Lord Sankarshan, Garbhodaksha Vishnu emanating from Lord Pradumna, Chirudaksha Vishnu or Paramatma emanating from Aniruddha, the cosmic scale of creation. You can see the clear relationship of that and to our own psychology, to our problems of being too puffed up, too much false ego, or having mental disturbances, or needing to fix our intelligence better. Srila Prabhupada points out a direct link. So, therefore, yes, there are very complex metaphysical explanations in the Vedic literature of the movements of the human minds. And as we read in the beginning, referring to that esoteric book by that Englishman, Mr. Mead. So, psychology is actually operating on two levels. There's the local human psychology, and there's the cosmic psychology, the archetypical psychology of it, that's exhibited by the Supreme Lord as His subtle energies. And actually, by His expansions. Like Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu lies in yoga nidra, so he's always in a state of apparent sleep or unconsciousness. And He's the greatest Vishnu. So similarly, the greatest part of us is lying in total unconsciousness all the time. You see? Therefore, we have only a very slight idea. You know, right now we have some idea we've read, we've heard, we believe, yes, I'm a devotee of Krishna, but exactly which devotee in Goloka Vrindavan? What's your spiritual name? What's your spiritual form? Where do you live? What's your rasa with Krishna? What do you do in Goloka Vrindavan? Who's your mother? Who's your father there? Who are your friends? I don't know. That's all covered by darkness, you see. And then implanted within that darkness are the seeds of desire, because we're in ignorance of our real identity in relationship to Krishna. Therefore, so much of our being is unfulfilled, and so that unfulfilled nature of our very selves are the seeds of desire. So just like Mahavishnu, He has within Him the seeds of the universes, and while they're within Him, they're static. They're just in potential. But then He breathes them out, and they begin to grow. They float on the top of the causal ocean like so many bubbles of foam, and they grow and they get bigger and bigger. And the Lord is simultaneously entering into each one of them as Garbhodaksha Vishnu. And then within those universes, Brahma appears and He gives all the jivas their bodies, and Lord Paramatma enters into the hearts of those jivas simultaneously. So you can see this connection. We have deep in the core of our heart these seeds of desire, and they sprout and they manifest first in the subtle platform, in the mind. We conceive of our desires in the mind, you see, either through memory, remembering something, or we're perceiving things that we become attached to in the mind, dieto vishepam sasangan teshu pajayate, or the mind just creates its own fantastic images that we become attached to. This is like, artists are expert at that, you see, just inventing wild images and And then they become known for them. Salvador Dali in his melted watches, or Picasso in his multiple faces, you know, faces seen from different angles simultaneously. They create these out of their minds, and these also be just these mental creations become objects of it. But that's all going, the point is, that's all going on the subtle platform, the linga platform, shukshma platform. And then whatever we think about on the mental platform and become attached to, and we start to feel emote. This is what actors do, you know, there's this term, emote. So an actor is given a character. The character is just an idea, you know. You're the hero of the film, you're a cop. You know, the script gives some basic idea. So then the actor, he reads the script and he starts to think about it and think about it. And he starts to identify with that character more and more. And then he actually, emotions start to come up. Yeah, this character, he's like this. He's kind of a nice guy, but he's got an angry side that comes out sometimes. And he's also got a sad side. So all these things are created by the actor in his mind, you see. And then from that feeling stage, then willing, then it has to be acted out. Actually, that's a common term these days, acting out. You hear that often, people acting out their emotions. So that's what happens, thinking, feeling, willing. First there's just the idea, the thought, the conception, like we see here, mahat. The intelligence, and then taijasa, the vision of the object that's generated by the intelligence, the vision in the mind, that shining vision. And then finally vishva. Vishva means the growth stage where you act it out, it becomes physical. So there, the Lord expands himself so that these three stages are possible. They're only made possible by him expanding. But ultimately, these three are expanding from Vasudeva, who was in the Turiya stage, transcendental, and as Bhagavatam 11th canto states, the Turiya platform, the transcendental stage, pervades the other three. So even though we as spirit soul, we find ourselves, yes, as I said, we're, you know, sleeping at night, heavy, conked out, deep sleep, snoring away, you know. You know, when you snore, you're making a loud sound, but you're so unconscious, you yourself don't even hear it. You know? You're making this loud, like sawing a piece of wood. But you're so out of it that you don't even hear it. And someone else hears it and wakes you up. Hey, wake up and go to sleep. So that is there in us. But dreaming, and then acting out in the wakeful state. But all of that is pervaded by Vasudeva consciousness, because actually we are pure spirit soul. Actually we are the Shakshi, we are the witness. We are witnessing. There's one Nobel Prize winner, he named Richard Feynman, and he wrote this poem. It's an interesting poem that keeps backing up, to that transcendental observing self. If I can remember the poem correctly, it goes, I wonder why I wonder. I wonder why I wonder why I wonder. I wonder why, I wonder why, I wonder why, I wonder. And he keeps going back. Because you can keep backing up from the mental processes, you see. And observe, you know. You can always back up and observe. Even observe yourself. And here you get an idea. Even we can get an idea of Krishna's, how Krishna expands himself. Because in a way we do the same thing. You see, here we are, you know, absorbed in some, you know, anxiety. We have some problem in our life that we're obsessed with. Totally, God, oh. And then we step back from that. And then we look at ourselves and we think, why am I getting so, you know, messed up by this? And then we can even back up from that and look at it, watch ourselves, you see. And you can back up from that and watch yourself. You can keep doing like that. So from this you can get some idea of how Krishna is. He actually expands himself into personalities that way. We in a limited, but actually when the jiva become, when the jiva is no longer jiva, but because we explained the meaning of jiva a couple days ago, that it actually means conditioned soul. So when the jiva is no longer jiva, but actually Brahma Bhuta, and actually enters into the Swarup Shakti of the Lord, then that living entity gets the same power, is endowed by the same power as Krishna. By Krishna's grace, Narada Muni lives in Goloka Vrindavan as the Brahmin boy Madhu Mangal. And in Vaikuntha, he's Narada playing the Tumburu and going wherever he likes, going to any Vaikuntha planet, going to see Mahavishnu, going to see Garbhatakshaya Vishnu, going to see Ananta at the bottom of the universe, going to see Lord Svetadvipa on the Milk Ocean at the top of the universe in Satyaloka, going to see the different avatars as they appear, going to see Lord Nisringadev, going to see, of course, Lord Krishna when he appears, actually himself appearing in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Srivas Thakur. See, so one who becomes liberated and empowered by the Swarup Shakti, then in the same way can expand his consciousness personally as various manifestations of personality. So today's what we read was very technical. I also came to this class very exhausted. Haven't eaten today. I got up today, God knows what hour, and I started immediately writing because we're having our, on the other side of the board, we're starting on Monday our Bhagavatam class, so I started writing a class study guide for that at something like 3 in the morning. I'm pretty burned out right now. So, and it's Friday. TGIF, thank God it's Friday. So no one blames you for closing early on Friday. But if anyone has any questions, I mean, this is quite a lot of thick material, so you might have some questions you want to ask. Yes?
So, what was the last sentence you said? The last thing you said,
yeah?
About the devotees who are in the Swarupa Shakti already, and they should this policy by Krishna's worship expand to be several points in so many different places and levels.
Yeah.
So in the realm of status, Krishna gives them and like to his freedom as he has.
Well, the devotees in who are established in the Swarup Shakti, they are Ragatmika devotees. You see, we are on the path of Raganuga Bhakti. And that means we follow in the footsteps of the great Ragatmika Bhaktis, Bhaktas, like, for example, in the Matrika Vatsalya Rasa is Mother Yashoda. So, Prabhupada said about Mother Yashoda, personalities like Mother Yashoda, one of his phrases was, they have wonderful love of Godhead. In other words, they are potencies of Lord Krishna. they're one and different from Lord Krishna. So they're appearing as devotees of Krishna, but they're endowed with wonderful love of Godhead. Srimati Radharani is the Mahabhava Swarup. She is the very form of the most explosive, magnificent, incomparable state of love of Godhead there is. No one can compare to her. But then there's Mother Yashoda, who has this, she's just the motherly affection par excellence. You know, she's just the consummate mother. Because she's the mother of God, the mother of Krishna. And so her heart is always filled with, overflowing with unlimited motherly emotions for Lord Krishna. So this is not, this is something we are meant to follow, you see. So this is actually manifested by Krishna. So these Ragatmika Swarup Shakti devotees are in a special category. We are meant to follow them. So if we follow them and we become dear to them, then our place in the spiritual world and in the Swarup Shakti is also assured. I've seen, there's some very beautiful, rare paintings from Vrindavan. Of course, when we talk of paintings from Vrindavan, the question can be raised, well, what's the scriptural source? How bona fide are they? So maybe I shouldn't be mentioning this, but anyway, they're really amazing paintings. And there's one painting of Srimati Radharani instructing the cobras of Vrindavan. She's sitting and she's holding the Jnana Mudra, and there's all these cobras, and they're coming, and you know, they're just creeping around her, and one of them is coming very close, like, you know, and kind of entwining around her, and she's kind of, you know, petting it, and she's giving them instruction. And then there's another painting I've seen with Radharani and her cat. She has a pet cat, and she's petting this tiger tabby cat. So, you know, these are living entities who've made it, you know. Somehow or other, they're, you know, even in the body of snakes, somehow Radharani likes them, and she's giving them instruction. I can't tell from the painting what she's telling them, but you know, she's definitely got her finger up in the Jnana Mudra, and she's telling them something. And other such, you know, Radharani talking to parrots and different animals in Vrindavan. There's so many paintings like that. And it said Radharani has her garden, she has her special garden with special flowers that grow, and she offers these flowers, makes garlands from them, offers them to Krishna. So she has her domain, and within that domain there are all different kinds of living entities who, by the blessing of the Bhakti Shakti, have entered that domain and are being utilized by her in her service to Krishna. So that's the meaning of Raganuga Bhakti, simply to follow in the footsteps, to aspire to assist one of these great devotees in their devotional service to Krishna. And if we can do that, even if we're just a cobra in Vrindavan, if we can attend a class taught by Radharani, that's really the success of our life.
You're funny, you're just.
Anything else? Any other questions? Yes.
Sometimes we have, this is connected with this question, sometimes we have personalities who have, like, you know, obviously portion of the expansion of this person, you know, you have two or three different personalities in one person, you know, like in Chaitanya Charitamrita, we have so many companions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who had, you know, like embodiment of different personalities. And how to understand, or can give.
What is that one who is Prahlad and his one associate who is a combination of Sri Prahlad Maharaj and
Vasudevdatta.
He's Prahlad Maharaj and
Some Manjari or something.
And a Manjari, yes. Yeah,
something.
Mixed together.
And another Roy also
Yeah. Well, obviously this is not kindergarten bhakti yoga. But I remember having a discussion about this with a godbrother of mine who spent a lot of time in Bengal and read a lot of the literature that is available in Bengal, and discussed this with local Vaishnavas. And he said actually rasas or these identities, they're compared, these personalities and their emotional states are ultimately compared to flames of a fire. So if you look at a flame of a candle, it looks like one thing, but if you really look at it, this is an example in the Bhagavatam. The flame is appearing again and again and again and again, more rapidly than the eye can see. And the flame is taking many shapes, but more rapidly than the eye can see. So, yeah, so in this way, just like there can be one fire, but there can be in one fire a tower of flame here and a tower of flame there. Here it's burning very bright, there it's burning very bright. Here the flame may be blue, there it may be green, there it may be yellow, depending on what's fueling it. But it's one big fire, you see. Yet within this one big fire there are unique characteristics. So I can offer that. Actually, this is inconceivable because we're talking about Krishna's antaranga shakti, his internal potency. And if you are not in his internal potency, then that's the example of, you know, the closed jar of honey, and you're licking the glass with your tongue, trying to explain what the sensation is like, but you're not tasting it. You have to be able to open the jar, and that means we have to come to the appropriate state of consciousness. So, is there anything else? Yes?
Sometimes Srila Prabhupada refers to this dreaming stage, and he explains that it's similar to the moment when the soul goes out of the body, I mean, the
period of death. Death?
Yes. So is there such similarity? I mean, the case where the soul does not go immediately back home to God, but has to wander here and there for the next destination until he gets another.
In a ghostly state. Yeah.
Yeah, before the next gross body.
Well, you see, there is a subtle realm, and it is complex in the Sudarshan Yantra. So there's the Astapuri, they're called the eight cities of dreams, the eight places the living entity goes at night. So one of them is the station of the three modes of nature. So the three modes of nature are there. The vasanas are there, the subconscious desires coming into the conscious mind. The Jadamaya, the Panchamahabhutas in their subtle form, earth, water, fire, air, ether is there. The senses are there. That means the subtle senses, because our gross senses have to give the information to the mind. So that point of connection, where what we see enters the mind, that's the point of the subtle sense of sight. So they're there. Vidya moha is there. Ignorance and illusion is there. So anyway, there are these it's quite a involved realm, a subtle realm. So so the point I wanted to make is that the three modes are there. So that means the subtle realm is also just like the gross realm. You know, you go to a city like Calcutta or any great city, and you'll find parts of the city are more in the mode of goodness. You know, they have nice parks and houses are clean and the people are well dressed. And then you have the parts that are in the mode of passion, cars racing back and forth, and then businessmen running and talking on their two cell phones at once, you know, and a third one ringing in the pocket. And me running after them with three revolvers. And then you have the tamasic part of town, you know, where the bars and the so on and so forth, the drunks and the heroin addicts and the, you know, the dark spots of town. So similarly, the subtle realm has an aspect that is more in goodness, an aspect that is, I mean, overall it is in passion, but there are aspects that are more in goodness and there are aspects that are more in ignorance. So a ghost is a disembodied mind, a mind that is separated from the body, but which is in the tamasic part of the subtle realm. So therefore there, if you want to read about it, then read Garuda Purana. There's some very graphic depictions of different kinds of ghosts. Their names are given, Bhutas and Pretas and etc., etc., and what they look like. And so if you like that sort of thing, you can read the Garuda Purana. I'm not going to talk about, especially not at sunset. Otherwise, they'll all be coming out of the room. But they get caught there, and according to their sinful activities in the human form of life. And Prabhupada said, like for example, one simple example Prabhupada gave is that if a person was meant, if his karma was that he was to live to 70 years old in his body, but at age, let's say 25, he committed suicide. So then he has to spend at least 50 years as a ghost. You see. And that means, in other words, he retains that same mind that he had and has to remain within that subtle body. The gross body isn't there, but he keeps that identity and he has to live it out for at least 50 years. But Prabhupada also said, committing suicide is breaking the law. So when you break the law, then you can get additional time added on. So, you know, you might have to spend centuries and centuries in that disembodied mind. Anyway, let's not ask any more questions about ghosts, please. I don't want to talk about them. Okay, so then on Monday, I think we'll be moving on to from this Upanishadic diagram of the mind to actual Vaishnava Vedantic and Bhagwat diagrams, which are much more interesting than this, much more detailed, much more exacting. All right then. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Jai.
Something to add to my question. Sometimes because through this eternal association with Krishna, the maturation, the expansions of human, usually we use the term jiva, but is it proper at all?